Hey, this is Susie Larson. If you don't have time to listen to the full podcast, here's a highlight from today's show.
You know, the New Testament is absolutely saturated with talk about power. And it's because, of course, they were living in the direct aftershocks of the resurrection of Jesus. And they'd experienced this categorically different divine power from anything they'd ever experienced. Ordinary folks, with all their flaws, discovered they had access to a power that they had never imagined. And they set in motion the deepest cultural transformation in history anywhere in the world. And that was not because they, you know, sort of studied Machiavelli and, you know, got the right degrees and credentials and marshaled the right strategy. It's because they were overtaken with the power of God. And I think it's very important that we get that straight. This is, you know, when we talk about power, we are not just talking about kind of using what I think I, my little bit of it that I may have. It's about being caught up into this much bigger story that gives me access to a kind of power the world doesn't even know about.
And it really speaks to the scripture that he chooses the foolish to shame the wise, you know?
I mean,
he takes the things that are not to nullify the things that are. He glories in doing that because it's his power in us. And when you think about that, what I marvel about as I think of this concept of power is that he draws near to the humble. You know, scripture says he considers a high and lofty place to dwell in a humble heart. So he's no really respecter of persons. So it's not power for hierarchy. It's power, as you said, that people will flourish, that his kingdom would come and his will would be done. So different than the kind of pursuit of power we see in this world.
Yes. There are two kind of mistakes that go together that people make often with worldly power. And one is, if they're in a position of power, they try to preserve the existing structures and keep, you know, if they have some privilege and status, they want to keep it. And then the other mistake is, you know, you could call it revolution, where people who have very little power seek to overthrow those in power and take over. And what is interesting about the New Testament and the New Testament church and the people of God at their best through history is that they've been no respecter of persons in a much deeper way, which is to say they're neither about just sort of arbitrarily holding on to power or overthrowing one group and then putting another group in power. And what happens on the other end of revolutions is you just get a new group of oppressors, honestly, most of the time. Instead, a much more radical thing happens when the gospel is let loose in a community, which is that everyone is humbled and everyone is ennobled. And, you know, Peter quotes Joel in Acts 2, and he says, you know, your old men in that society, that would mean people with the status of age, and your young men, people you would normally not listen to them because they're young, servants and serving maids. And he lists this, all these pairs of relative power, relative lack of power. He says they're all prophesying. They're all engaged in the work of the kingdom. And it's a very different idea than revolution, which says, you know, the wrong people are in power. The gospel vision humbles everybody, especially, you know, it definitely levels the mountains, but it also, and it raises the valleys, and we end up with everyone having something to contribute rather than just one group being swapped for another group.